Brian Lindsay.
That's me. I'm Brian Lindsay.
We are back in the basement.
Yeah.
The lab.
I think we should say this.
Yeah.
We consider ourselves a couple of nobodies. That's not a shot at the people we invite on the show.
No. I wonder.
A couple of nobodies ask you to join in.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep wondering as I send emails to guests what they go, do I really want to be on this show? Like, what a title.
How far have we fallen?
Yeah. Am I in the D-list category now that a couple of nobodies reached out to me?
Yeah.
So.
For sure.
But we do have a new friend on the show. So we again, the last couple of weeks, it's been your friend, my friend.
Yep.
We have a couple of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
But what's cool about this week recording is we have a new friend.
Yep.
Either one of us has met Brian Fuller. He is a musician from South Georgia, but living in Nashville, doing the Nashville thing. Mm-hmm. And you know what we have in common with him? He wears Hattaboy hats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how did you come to discover Hattaboy? I know it's not just you were in Ace Hardware and like couldn't resist it.
So we played a show with a guy named Dylan Marler. I don't know if y'all are familiar with him, but so we're on the road with Dylan. He's a great friend of mine. And I was at the merch booth after the show, and I was, you know, signing t-shirts and taking pictures and whatever, and this guy walks up to me, and I say Attaboy all the time, and this guy walks up to me, and he has a hat on that says Hattaboy, and I was like, dude, that is a sick hat. I love that. And he was like, yeah, man, it's my buddy's company, and, you know, you should check him out, you know, give him a follow on Instagram or whatever. And I did, and then the owner of it reached out to me, and you know, we kind of got to talking and got to know each other a little bit better. And
just,
I mean, not a crazy story, but I just was I think it was in Chattanooga. We were in, we were playing in Knoxville.
Okay.
And that guy just showed up wearing that hat. And I was like, dude,
we are unofficially sponsored by Hattaboy. Yeah. He's not giving us any money yet, but
no, I'm a hat guy. Like I like hats.
Same.
I feel comfortable in a hat. And when my buddy Ben, he started Hattaboy Company, and it started there floating on the river. Do you know?
Yeah.
So they're floating on this river, and somebody says, Hattaboy. Yeah. And he's a guy who's willing to say yes to stuff.
To the craziest things.
Very risk tolerant. Hey, let's try it. Yeah, I think I could flip that house. I'm going to put an offer in. Yeah, let's buy 50 head of cattle. Let's do it. I'll go in.
Yeah.
Like, he's the friend that it's like, if you want to challenge somebody, like, if I buy a dirt bike, do you promise you'll buy one? Shake on it. If I get one, will you get one?
Yeah.
And then
we're going together.
Yes.
Okay. He'll be the first to buy it, too.
That's me. Yeah. And they're floating on the river. And I think somebody said Hattaboy. And he was like, oh, that would be a great, like, hat company. And Lexi was like, yeah, Hattaboy Hat Company. And then they started it. And I talked to him a couple days ago. And, like, I think they did 500 hats Tuesday or something like that.
I don't know. I'm sure it's...
Bro, so they're starting to grow. He's starting to grow.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. I still think they feel like a boutique company. Like, you know, like that. And boutique is not bougie.
No.
Like, if you get into hunting and fishing and all that stuff, there's, like, very boutique stuff. Like, gear, doe urine, you know? Like boutique dough.
Yeah.
You can't just get your stuff from Walmart. You got to order that.
Little side note, there is a little like dough esters company that is just, they kind of do their own thing on the side. Yeah. I don't know what is different about them, but I started seeing them pop up last year. And I mean, it all smells the same to me. I don't know the difference in any of it, but... Apparently they're doing pretty good, but I didn't know there was like, there's so many different brands of that stuff. But dude, the thing about hats is it's one of those businesses that when you get into it, it'll blow up all at once, and then everybody will buy them, and then everybody starts seeing that everybody has the same hat, and they're like, oh man, they found out about it.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky one, dude. Like. But Hattaboy, they are super cool. I mean, he's probably sent me, gosh, I have plenty. Yeah. I have plenty of Hattaboy hats. Yeah.
I was pitching a whole golf line to him yesterday of hats. Because golf, like hunting and fishing is a hat thing. Golfers love a hat.
Yeah.
He did a couple one-offs. Like, yeah. I gave my dad one last year for Father's Day.
Yeah.
He did, like, a couple just here and there.
Yeah.
But he has had a girl hat.
I'm sure. Yeah, those are nice.
And he
just had a
baby. He's got two kids, one named Wilder, one named Jagger. And
I love those names.
Right?
Those are good names.
And I think they're going to, at some point, I think it's in the plans to do had a baby.
There you go. That'd be sick.
I don't even know if it's going to be hat. I don't know what they'll do. But it's like, had a baby.
So Brian, you're a country musician. I want to know the hat conversation. Do you feel the pressure of Nashville to move from the ball cap to the traditional cowboy hat? Is there ever that kind of pressure?
Not at all, man. I have kind of categorized in my brain the different, like, I guess, subgenres of country.
Okay.
And I mean, obviously you have like bro country and like poppier country stuff. And then you have, you know, traditional country.
Beyonce.
And
you know,
you have Beyonce now. Up. Yeah. And I think, like, the cowboy hat thing to me, and this is not knocking anybody that wears them, because there are some like authentic cowboys that, like Cody Johnson.
Yeah.
He was in the rodeo before, or he was doing rodeo shows before he ever got into country music. He's a cowboy, and he owns a ranch in Texas, and he cowboys in Texas when he's not on the road. That's a cowboy. I am not a cowboy at all. I don't claim to be. I didn't grow up that way. I grew up Southern, and I mean, that's just how I was raised. And I don't know, no part of me is ever going to, I'll never put on a cowboy hat as like part of my
brand,
you know, brand. Yeah. I wore a cowboy hat at my wedding. I'll wear one like to outings. Just kind of the one that I have, I really love it, is brand. I just got my initials branded on the back of it. So I have a cowboy hat that I will wear occasionally to, you know, really nice events, only because I love wearing a hat, and I can't wear just your typical ball cap to like a wedding. Right. So yeah, to get away with it, I wear a cowboy hat to like weddings.
I feel
stuff,
like the Texas, Oklahoma folks can own that cowboy hat life.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Georgians and the, you know, I mean, we got country singers coming from Minnesota all over the place, and like Australia now, and I'm going like, maybe that doesn't fit your brand. Like, maybe you need to find a different hat to wear.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I like to think of myself as authentically Southern.
Okay.
And I don't know if y'all remember a guy named Josh Thompson, but he was he was real popular for a minute. He had a song called Way Out Here that Riley Green actually recut, but that kind of music is like what I like, him and Eric Church back before Chief, like Carolina and Sinners Like Me, and you know, that kind of music, or that like type of music. I loved that stuff. It was just, it was what was on in the truck almost 100% of the time. And that's kind of like the stuff that I love, the lyrically and sonically. And I feel like, obviously, your brand is, you know, it's so important to kind of nail that nowadays.
So here's the question. So traveling around, when I get to go to Africa a lot, and I'll go and they give me these like traditional outfits.
Yeah,
I went to Thailand one time. They gave me this traditional like shirt to wear.
Nice.
Which,
that's all.
The Thai people are kind of small.
I was gonna wonder.
In general, they're like a small people.
Just smaller people. Yeah,
they don't. They're not generally as tall and as big. And so I'm a giant, right? Like I'm like never. I hadn't been small since I was like 11. And like at 10, I was wearing Husky jeans from Walmart.
I had some Huskies.
Right? It's how you knew you were kind of on the fatter side of stuff.
You were a big dude.
Yeah, I was Husky.
Not even, I don't even like using the word fat, just big bones,
man. Yeah, sure.
You're just built strong.
Oh, yeah. Keep
country
yeah.
strong.
That's what, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I love you guys.
I feel like yeah. there's a song here called Husky.
I feel like you guys are so, you guys are my hype guys yeah. here. Because in middle yeah, school, I was just being bullied. Nobody was like, you're big boned, buddy. You know, they were like, hurry up, fatty.
You're thick with muscle.
So, even Thailand, they got me this shirt. And if you wear that there, they love it. Like, yeah. if you're in Africa and you go somewhere and we're doing something and they give you that. But if you were to wear that through the airport, like Atlanta, it would be like cultural appropriation. You're trying to steal their culture, all this stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder how cowboys feel. If you show up at the rodeo, and you're wearing a cowboy hat, are they like, yeah, this is our guy? Or do they feel like, what are you doing? Who do you pose?
I feel like
fake.
I feel like, especially cowboys in general, you can look at somebody that isn't one. If you are one, you can look at somebody that isn't one and be like, that guy is not, he's dressed like one, but he's wearing it wrong or whatever, you know. And I mean, let's be honest, most of those guys don't really care about what another dude's wearing anyways.
Valid.
But I have heard a really good friend of mine that is, you know, like he is in the rodeo scene and grew up doing that whole, like living that lifestyle. And he's told me a few times, he's like, man, it drives me nuts to see people that aren't cowboys wearing cowboy hats and attire, because it's just like, man. But again, you know, it is such a, it's also kind of a compliment, because it's like, these guys, we think these guys are cool. We want to, you know, look like them, or, you know, dress like them. And there's also people that wear them and know that they're not a cowboy, and, you know, they're just like, I don't care, you know. But
I would think at the rodeo, it's less about the hat and more about the boots. If you got boots that aren't broke in, the cowboys are
brand new, out of the box.
Yeah, yeah. You just got to buy one, get two down on Broadway.
Yeah.
And they're
went to boot board and
like, those boots aren't broken.
No, there's a I wish I could remember the name of it, but there's a massive kind of Western store in Texas. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Costco.
Anyways,
Costco.
I went down there to play around with a friend of mine kind of the end of last year, and on the way to the town we were playing in, he's from Texas, so he took me to the store, and we walked in there, and I was like, oh, we don't have anything like this in Tennessee. Nothing. And you get it. It's kind of like if you go to like a true bait and tackle shop, or like, you know, a hunting out, like a store like that. And they've got the things that real fishermen and real hunters and outdoorsmen, this is the kind of things that they actually think about and they actually need, versus going to, you know, like a gas station where they just have crickets and, you know, whatever, you know, just the odd end little things. You're like, oh, I didn't even know people needed these things.
Yeah.
But, dude, it's, I don't know, man. There's so many walks of life in Nashville as is already. And
well, I feel like I have a lot of respect for the hat game.
I got a lot
of respect for the hat game.
I wear it every day.
Yeah, same. I'm always in a hat. Like when I go speak at events, I usually ask for a dress code. Like, hey, what's your dress code? Hat or no hat? Because I have formal hat. Like, you know, that are all black.
Do you have a wedding hat?
No,
do you have a white?
No sweat stains and stuff. And I just have to cycle through them because, you know, I'm out working in them or whatever. Yeah. So a lot of respect.
I have chosen not to go to certain restaurants because you can't wear a hat in them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that may sound silly, but like there's one restaurant in particular in town, and I was booking a reservation for me and my wife. This has been a couple of years ago, but I was looking at reservation times at this one particular restaurant, and it said there was a dress code, no hats, and like had a real strict dress code. And I was like, well, not going here.
Yeah.
We're going to find another.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got a bunch of hats, man. Plenty of them.
Okay, so here's my official request. When you play the Opry, right?
When I play the Opry?
When you play the Opry.
Prophesy.
The next time you play the Opry. This is the way I'll put it.
No, I haven't played it yet.
Well, I know, but I still like saying the next time.
Yeah, the next time.
I like that.
Wear
a Hattaboy hat. You don't have to say yes or no. But like, I'm just putting the official request out there. And not as a person who I haven't bought into the company, but just like want to see my brand there. Except I am nervous that when he does it, everybody's going to rush out and get... And I'll at least have like the original line, like the original first line.
Yeah.
Like,
where did he get the vintage ones at?
I'll see if he can make me like a custom Attaboy hat to wear on the Opry.
Yeah. Okay. No. Awesome.
I'll do it.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. We can get
Ben. You have to Ben. When I play the Opry, I need a custom Attaboy.
Ben listens to every episode. Yeah. He'll have it done.
Yeah.
He'll be in DMs probably as soon as this comes out.
He'll go ahead and send it now.
Yeah.
He's that.
He'll scheme it. Yeah. He's already thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'll save it. I'll save it just for that occasion.
So you're in Nashville doing music. Was music always the dream, or were like you're in South Georgia and you're going, I'm going to be a lawyer? Or was it always going to be music for you?
Yeah. I tell people this a lot. There's a video of me when I was... I don't even think I was a year old yet. You know, those old VHS tapes, they would have like the timestamps on them or whatever. And I was running around the house, like playing and singing. And I think over the years, the vision evolved a little bit, because when I first started out, I was just playing like lead guitar and garage bands. I wasn't even singing. I was in and out of, you know, a handful of bands that somebody started down there where I'm from. And funny enough, I was in high school and I'd gotten in a fight with a kid in the boys' locker room after gym one day. And I got suspended from school, and my mom had pretty much taken everything away from me aside from a bed and my guitar. And I sang a little bit, but I didn't sing in front of people. I just kind of did it to my, you know, for my own sake of it. And she came home from work one day and I didn't hear her come home. And I was sitting in my room just kind of, you know, hammering away on singing and playing guitar. And she comes in there and she's like, "You're actually pretty good." As like part of my punishment for being suspended, she made me learn three songs. And her and some other family members were in a traveling gospel group, and they were playing an event in my hometown like that weekend or whatever. And she was like, "You're going to learn three songs and you're going to play these three songs, you know, by yourself at this event on stage." And I was like, "That sounds terrible. That sounds very scary."
What a good mom.
I know. Yeah.
Wish my mom punished me that way.
Yeah,
and I did it, and from the second I got off, I sang, I've never been able to remember the third song, but I sang My Kind of Crazy by Brantley Gilbert, In Color by Jamie Johnson.
Fantastic song.
And there was one other one that I can't remember which one it was, but I got off stage, and I was like, man, whatever that was, I want to do that forever. Mm. And ever since then, that is what kind of, That is where the dream of singing and writing and all that stuff professionally, I guess, was kind of born. And that was when I was 13. And I picked up the guitar when I was probably about 6 or 7. And yeah, about 13 years old, I was like, I'm going to move to Nashville. I'm going to figure out how to do this.
I think Brian and I speak, and Brian sings and leads worship and plays and does a variety of creative things. But I think anybody who's on a stage knows you're either built for the stage or you're not. Like, I mean, I think you can grow into it, but like,
yeah, for sure.
When I speak, that's the feeling I get. Like, when can I do this again? When like 99% of the world is like, I will never stand in front of people and do X, whether it be sing or speak or whatever, because there's that pure panic. But I think God wires some of us up built for that.
Yeah.
Which is your? You do both, Brian Lindsay. You sing and you preach or speak. Mm-hmm. Which one is it that you leave the stage going, I'm built to do that, or is it both?
Gosh, I don't know. I think that there is something about connecting with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I love music, but there's a lot of people who love music, maybe even more than I do, that don't want to perform.
Yeah.
But I'm always holding a guitar. We have guitars just out. Yeah. We have instruments just out in our house. I'm always holding a guitar or doing something like that. But yeah, I don't know that I could, if I had to pick one, I guess I would just like speak while holding a guitar. I don't know.
Yeah.
The Tim Hawkins.
Yeah. I had this friend when I was in Lexington, Kentucky.
Johnny Cass used to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell stories while I'm playing.
Yeah.
This guy that I knew for a little while in Lexington, Kentucky, like when I met him, he'd just gotten clean. My story, you know, I was young and dumb, tried a bunch of different things growing up. But I was never an addict as far as a drug addict and stuff. Never really went that route.
Yeah.
But he talked about the first time he did heroin.
Right.
And he said, when I did heroin, and this like look on his face, he said, when I did heroin, I was like, I was created to do this. Like, this is what I was created to do.
Yeah.
And which is such a distortion, right, for someone's mm-hmm. life, because heroin doesn't actually give you anything.
Yeah.
There's no payback. It only takes.
Yeah. But
I think when we have something that the Lord's given us, whether it's mm-hmm. on stage with music, it doesn't only steal. It also mm-hmm. gives.
Right.
Right. And yeah. But he's so just perfectly that I was created to do. Whatever that is, I have to have more of it. My body was created for that thing. My makeup, my chemistry. And yeah, I definitely don't think music was ever something that I was interested in until like 2007, I graduated college. And somebody handed me a microphone. And it was the first time I ever sang into a microphone. But now, when you start to have things in your life, you're like, man, if I never got to do that again, that would be a problem. That would, yeah. If I never got to do that again for the rest of my life, that's an issue. Big stage, small stage, living room, arena.
Yeah.
I don't care. But if I don't ever get to do that again, we're going to have issues. Because I'm going to need to cope somehow.
Yeah, that is, I tell my wife this all the time because this industry is full of this really high highs and really low lows.
Yeah.
And even the people that seem to be on top of the mountain, to the public can sometimes be in those really, really deep mm-hmm. valleys. And sometimes when I get in those, really low spots, and I'm just like, man, I don't know. This is hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do next. I feel stuck or whatever it is. I always tell her I could quit. I could give up. I could walk away from it, but I don't know what I would do without it. Because a lot of people compare it to a drug and say that high that you get from being on stage. But more so than it is a drug, I feel like it's just the expression that you get to put out into the world and the creative. I mean, I think about God as a creator.
Yeah.
And when he created the earth, he looked at it and was like, this is good. I want to share it with other people.
Yeah.
I want other people to experience what I just made. And a lot like that, and I'm not obviously not comparing myself to God, but or anybody for that matter, but I think that people and God share that same feeling. Like when you create something, you want other people to see it and hear it and experience it with you. And when you get on a stage, with any size crowd out in front of you, for me at least, and we're experiencing the same feeling together.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like there's just nothing. There's nothing in the world like it. I'm sure it's also like with athletes when they get on the field and, you know, or on the court or whatever, and everybody at the same time, or all there, everybody's going through the same feeling, whether it's frustration or excitement or, you know, like nervousness, whatever it is. That's just, it's really cool to be able to experience something at the same time that everybody else is. And that's what I feel like music is for me. And I just don't know what I would, like you just said, I don't know what I would do.
I want to ask about the inverse of that, Brian. I had some friends, I was at dinner with some, like a group of people from my workplace, and there's a pastoral opening here in town, and they teased and they said, Jeff, do you want to put your name in? They were just teasing me about it. And I said, I probably need to at least come preach there once, because I preached there 26 years ago, and it was the second time I'd ever preached, and it was a disaster. I mean, it was horrible. I couldn't get up the stage fast enough, right? So I want an opportunity to come back and redeem myself and be like, I am pretty good at this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this creation and it's good kind of conversation, has there ever been a moment for Brian Fuller that you were up there giving your creation and you were like, this is a disaster? And how did you bounce back from that?
Oh, dude, all the time. All the time. I think, especially in this industry, you just kind of have to have this like you have to be a little stupid in a way that like, man, that was bad. But like, I know that it's not going to always be that bad.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like there's just a bit of hustle and, you know, resilience is the word I think I'm looking for, but, you just have to, when you walk off stage and you had a bad show, or, you know, you felt like you fumbled through your words through a sermon or whatever, you just have to be like, man, I know that I'm better than that. And I think that's what kind of makes you want to get back up on stage and do it again. Cause you're like, that's not my best. I know it's not my best. I've played better than that. Or I've spoke better than that, whatever. But I'm just a little crazy. And if I have a bad show, I get off stage and me and my band will sit down together and I'm like, okay, why was that bad? What happened that made it bad? And how do we make it better? And how do we fix it to where when that happens again, we know how to respond?
Yeah.
Because that's usually what it is. Like, it's never like you mess up one time or you hit a bad note or you say the wrong word or whatever it is, and then you're in your head for the rest of it. And that is usually what makes it bad. It's not, there are outside forces that can, you know, affect a show or affect, you know, whatever. But it's just usually in your head, and you start thinking about it too much, and you can't get out of that loop. And for me, I try to remember that. Like, if I mess up one time, I'm like, man, don't think about it. Just keep going and forget that even happened.
I have
because most people don't even notice it.
Yeah. I have this theory in general. It's not just speaking, because I do camps, and I've the last couple of years I've done a lot with like young people, high school, college students. I have this theory though that nobody will listen to your wisdom at all if you've never shown them you're idiot.
Yeah,
like you gotta show people.
Yeah,
the idiot in you, or they're not gonna, or the wise, the meaningful doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it's authenticity or maybe it's whatever, but those people who like are real on a platform, especially now when so many things are generated. That's like, you got to show them your idiot, your realness.
I think that people crave that, man. Like they want to see that, everybody wants to know that you're just like them.
Right.
Because anytime you're put on a platform, whatever level it might be, you kind of, to other people, you feel a little, you know, like you feel and look different than they do, I guess, in a way. And any way that you can make them feel like, oh, I could do that. I could do what he's doing. I just don't want to.
Right.
we're the same person. I think that's what makes people feel like connected to you in a weird way. So yeah, I think I let my idiot out every day. He comes and hangs out with me everywhere I go.
You know, one of the rules though, if you, yeah, like one of the, it's unwritten, but one of the rules to be like, whatever, trending, to be cool or whatever, is you can't try. Like if you're trying
honestly
to be trendy, right, or cool, if you're going trying, nobody wants you. Oh my gosh, he's trying too hard.
Right.
Who does he think he is? What is,
you can see it. Yeah. You can see it on people.
I'm
guilty of it, man. Yeah.
I bought these Adidas shoes the other day,
mm-hmm,
and they're like the dad style shoes, which I am a dad. I'm actually a granddad at this point. But like I put them on, and they're like the New Balance like shoes that are trending. And I went to my wife and I'm like, am I trying too hard for these shoes? Like, I'm the target audience for these shoes, but they're like trending for Gen Z now. And I'm like, am I trying too hard with these shoes? It is a question I think we ask ourselves anytime we step into space with anything, with songs, with sermons, with ministry, with whatever we're doing. Yeah. I think there's always a checkpoint in us to go, am I being authentic? Or am I trying too hard to fit into something that somebody wants?
Yeah.
What have you found in, you went to Nashville in 2019, you've been in a lot of songwriting rooms, you've been on stage in a lot of places. Where did you find the most authentic version of yourself in that process?
Dude, I actually was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. So long story short, when I moved to town, there was a guy that I met that told me, he was like, hey man, to make it in this business, you have to be different. You have to stand out and you have to do something that nobody else has ever done before or that nobody else is doing. And I kind of took that to heart and I was like, okay, well, if that's what this guy must know what he's talking about, you know, if that's what it takes, that's what I'm going to try to do. And for a really long time, for my first couple of years in town, I was trying to kind of pull something out of thin air and make the music sound different or make the song sound different, whatever it was. And it took me a really, really long time to figure out that what is the thing that is usually different about the individual that is making the music is their story a little bit, like where they came from. Mm-hmm. You know, how they speak, how they articulate them, you know, the things they say, whatever it is. And for a long time, I went through this phase of just, oh man, you know, I'm going to try to make my music sound like this. And then whatever the music sounded like, I would kind of mold my appearance and myself to fit what I thought that, like, what kind of guy or person would be singing these songs.
Yeah.
And I did that for a long time, and I did it publicly. I was putting out music constantly, and it constantly was changing and sounding different, and I was trying to, like, figure out my sound or whatever. And most people do that behind closed doors.
Right.
And I think when I finally felt, like, authentically me was when I just went back to, well, who was I before I moved to Nashville? Like, who was I when I lived back in Georgia, and what was I doing there, and what were me and my friends talking about, and you know what, you know, all of those questions. And I was like, oh yeah, that's who I am. Like, I'm not this person that I'm trying to make myself into. Like, I'm just a dude that moved from Georgia, and that's who I need to be, and that's who I want to be. And once I reverted back to that and just kind of let myself make mistakes and, you know, just kind of be who I was living down there, I felt like that was when my music really kind of started clicking, and I started getting more attention, and people were like, oh, these songs are great. I love these songs, you know, and the brand is cool. Like, we get what you're trying to do. But I think the world will do that to you in general. They'll be like, you got to be different. You got to stick out, you know?
Yeah.
And then you try to figure out what that is, and you never will. Like, you know, I say it like this all the time. Like, Lady Gaga isn't walking around in her kitchen wearing a meat uniform or a meat suit, you know, like that is a character she created, right. And she does it well.
Yes, yeah, Stephanie's not in the kitchen.
That's part of her personality.
Yeah,
yeah. You know who talks about that is like Jim Carrey,
right?
Jim Carrey talks about like there came a point where Jim Carrey was the character,
mm-hmm.
like he played all these characters, and then he was also playing Jim Carrey to the world.
Yeah,
right.
As opposed to like now he's got to wrestle with who is this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the guy who says you got to be different, you got to do this. If you could talk to you, then. Mm-hmm. What would you say? Not that he's wrong, but like, how would you say it to get you where you are now?
Dude, honestly, I think if I could like give myself a little bit of advice back then, I think that I would just tell myself to not try to fit in as much, and whoever ended up liking me, you know, those are your real fans and mm-hmm. and the people that you really want to have around. And whoever didn't, then it is what it is. You know, it's not a big deal.
So we've
go ahead. No, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. We've got a chance to talk to, you know, several people in Nashville, and we've got a bunch mm-hmm. of friends in mm-hmm. Nashville, and I've got musician friends and stuff. There seems to be this thing when people move to Nashville, there is this like vortex, right? That like mm-hmm. sucks you in to win Nashville.
Yeah.
Like you got to conquer Nashville.
Right.
That's how you get into the country music. That's how you conquer country music as opposed to you need to be in Nashville. You got to win Rinkin.
Yeah.
You're not winning Nashville.
Yeah, you have to convince the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And it's not like, and the funny thing is convincing the rest of the world is just being who you were.
Mm-hmm.
Just being a regular dude, because I had a ton of friends, you know, living back home, and I never really tried too hard to like try to convince those people to be my friends or like hang out with me or whatever. And then I got here and I was like, I have to make everybody like me. I have to mold and conform to all of these different groups. And dude, honestly, there just came a time where I was like, I could care less. Like if I don't want to go and hang out at this, you know, event or whatever, I'm not going to go. I don't mm-hmm. care. And some people in town will be like, well, that's career suicide. Like, you got to be out there hanging out with everybody and, like, you got to be around. And I just don't, like, there is some truth to that. Like, you know, when you're present somewhere, people see you and they think about you and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But, dude, I just, if you win over the rest of the world, everybody in Nashville is going to flock to, and that, unfortunately, kind of is the sucky part about town. Like, you're nobody until you're somebody. And then once you're somebody, everybody thinks mm-hmm. you're the coolest thing they've ever seen. And, you know, it's just it's a really dangerous loop to get stuck in, trying to convince everybody here that you're somebody worth being around.
There's a great song. Charles Kelly cut it, but Donovan Woods wrote it. It's called Leaving mm-hmm. Nashville. Have you ever heard that song?
Oh, yeah.
It is
great
like
song.
Essentially the story of Nashville. Like, everybody wants you when you're on top. When you're, you can't cut a song, nobody wants you. It's about a songwriter. And the hook is that he's never leaving Nashville. Like, in the good and the bad. And it's a quintessentially, we talked to Kylie Small already. She was she's a young rising artist who's at Belmont. We've talked to Abigail Joy, mm-hmm. who's trying to make it in Nashville in a whole different realm of music. And everybody kind of says this sort of similar story. They love you when you're up, they'll leave you when you're down, but they're never leaving town. Like, it is what they're there to do. Yeah. Your big break, or biggest break, I won't say the biggest break, but came with the song I Could Be That Rain, cut by Randall King, was a huge hit mm-hmm. for him. Would you prefer, if you, now I want to isolate you on one side or the other, would you prefer to be on the stage, or do you want to write the songs? Like, what is the bigger passion for you, or are they both the same?
They're equal. Like, I want to be able to do both, and I want to be able to do both at a high level.
Yeah.
And I look at them as two different things. Like, I don't really combine being an artist with being a songwriter. Because you don't have to be an artist, or you don't have to be a songwriter to be an artist.
Right.
There's plenty of artists, like, I mean, just Jason Aldean, for example. Like, I don't know that he's ever written a song he's put out. There may be one or two out there, but for the most part, he's cutting other people's songs. Mm-hmm. And so I look at them as two different things. And the artist side of things to me is like, performing is just, I just have such a good time doing it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. It just scratches an itch for me. And but so does songwriting, but they do it in completely different ways. And when you sit in a room and you write a song and you nail it and you, like, all the puzzle pieces fit, there's no feeling like it. It's awesome. You created something that wasn't there the day before. And then when you're on stage playing music, it's like you're getting that connection with people and you're having a good time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said for a long time, like when I first moved here, my goals and my reasoning for achieving those goals were different. Like, there was a point in time when I got here when I was like, I just want to be famous. And I think it would be awesome to, you know, have all this notoriety and all these achievements and stuff. And then as I kind of got older and my priorities started changing a little bit, I looked at what I do on stage and on the road in a way that, like, there is no better place to talk about Jesus or to spread the good news of the gospel than in a room full of people that are drinking. And like, there is much darkness that kind of fills those places. And for 30 to 90 minutes, you have those people's full and undivided attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some really cool stories of, like, being on stage and starting to talk about, you know, my story and my faith and stuff like that. And there's been people that have come up to me after the shows and been like, man, I've kind of been on the fence about the whole Jesus thing, but, like, I think I'm, after hearing what you said, I think I'm going to start going to church. And, you know, I think I'm going to try to, you know, learn more about him. And I think that's awesome. And that kind of, that fills my cup a little bit. But I want to be successful at both of them. Like, Michael Hardy, you know, the world knows him as Hardy. He does both of them, and he does both of them very well. And that is kind of what I would love for my career to look like. Like, being able to write songs and other people love my songs, and those songs go on to be big hits, and then me cutting my own songs and those songs going on to be big hits. So,
yeah.
It's a weird game though, man. But
yeah,
I love this about the Lord, like about my own relationship with Jesus and these things, is that God is not afraid of my success.
No,
like, God's not like, oh man, if he gets too big, he's gonna outshine the Son of God.
Yeah,
Jesus is like, I don't want him to outshine me. Millions of people gather in Jesus's name, mm-hmm. right? And no one almost can tell you anything about Caesar.
Yeah.
But at the time, Caesar was, you know, everywhere, on everything. But mm-hmm. and Jesus was this nobody rabbi.
Yeah.
And still we worship him. And so the Lord's not intimidated by my success. But at the same time, like, there are no spotlights in his shadow.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to leave a legacy. The legacy was left already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm just trying to add to him. But, man, when my son, who's 14, who has already surpassed being so much cooler than I ever dreamed of being, I'm never intimidated.
Yeah.
His exaltation when he's killing it and everybody else, when he's the funniest person in the room, I'm like, I love that. I don't think
you encourage it.
Yeah, I don't think, oh gosh, I wish that was, why is he taking my, mm-hmm. you know, my spot?
Yeah.
But I also know that he loves me, that I'm his dad. Yeah. So when you have that with the Lord's not intimidated by your success, by you being known. He created you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in his shadow, which is where I live, where I'm safe.
Yeah.
Like there are no spotlights. It's him.
Yeah. I wonder, and Brian, we've been having this conversation off air a lot, and maybe Brian Fuller can chime in, that maybe success is just stewardship. Like, we have gifts God's given us. We're not out trying to outshine God, but the greatest success we can have is to steward the things he's put in us. Because, again, you talked about it. If you don't get to speak, somebody's going to have to come check on you. Yeah. I feel that way. If I don't get opportunity to share, to do what God's built me to do, somebody come check on me because it's not going to be good. I would say that's the same. Do you feel that maybe, again, there's going to be, we wish success on you. I hope somebody puts a song on hold. I hope Al Dean or somebody puts a song on hold for you and it blows up. I hope your own recordings blow up. Mm-hmm. But is it simply a level of success just to be steward what God's put in you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really look at this, my career, as like, oh, I get to be famous one day or, you know, whatever that is. I truly feel like I was put here to do this. And that kind of goes back to that video I was telling you about a minute ago. Like when I was a kid, running around the house, beating on a guitar and singing, like I was doing it before I even understood what it was that I was doing.
Yeah.
And I think that in a lot of ways, yes, it is very difficult, but anything worth doing is difficult. And I think that in a lot of ways, God will give you these dreams. He'll give you these like visions and these, you know, these goals. And he cares more about your heart while you're doing it more than what you're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you have to be any kind of certain person or act a certain way in order to get these gifts that God's given you. Like for a great example right now is, you know who Ko Wetzel is, right?
Yeah.
Have you all heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
So Ko is, he's a big country artist, kind of came out, he started out in Texas, and he was known for this, like, the rowdy party. Like, he was drinking a handle of Jack on stage every night. And his fame, I mean, he blew up, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody kind of saw him as this, you know, not misfit, but just this, like, that guy is a ticking time bomb kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past couple of months, he has been, any interviews or podcasts or anything like that he does, he is talking about God and talking about how God has completely changed his life. And he's in did a complete 180. And I think if we just set out to do, no matter how long, because we're all lost, we're all sinners, we all fall short, and there's just no way around that. If we set out to do what it is we feel in our hearts we were meant to do, God will eventually meet us somewhere and completely change everything in an instant. And I mean, like Saul to Paul, you know, like, yes, he was going around and killing Christians, but at his core, he was a traveler. You know, he was somebody that was going from place to place to place to place to place. And obviously in the beginning, he was doing it for the wrong reasons. But then when God changed his heart, he was traveling place to place to place to place, doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And I think stewarding what God has put in our hearts to do is like the biggest form of gratitude we can give to him, because it's like, hey, I created you for this reason.
Yeah.
Why would you not go out and do it? But it's just being able to find the connection between the two and like trying to line up your priorities in the right way.
Have you been that rooted in your faith for a long time?
No. No, I mean, when I first moved to Nashville, and even still, man, I struggle with my faith more now than I have. When I found my own faith, I like to say I was on fire about it. You know, like I was telling everybody I ran into about God and Jesus. And I grew up with, you know, my parents were in a traveling gospel group. And I grew up in churches every Wednesday and Sunday. You know, I knew all the gospels. I knew, you know, I knew the bare minimum about the Bible, but I knew about it, you know. And when I moved to town, I was a loose cannon, and I loved going and hanging out at the bars and drinking with my buddies, and like I wasn't, you know, doing anything crazy, but I definitely wasn't waking up on Sunday morning going to church. I was waking up trying to get rid of a headache. And I just got humbled over and over and over and over again. And the one thing that kind of like helped shift perspective for me was at this point in my life, when the story was taking place, I was drinking a lot. I wouldn't necessarily consider myself like an alcoholic, but I didn't have to have it. But I was like, if I went out downtown and I told myself, man, we're not going to drink tonight, I would get down there and my buddies would be like, man, have a beer. And I'd be like, all right, don't twist my arm. And I remember I just kept feeling this pull to quit drinking. And I would always tell myself in the back of my mind, like, man, what about when I get married? Like, I'm going to want to have a beer when I get married. Or what about when I have my first number one? I'm going to want to have a beer when that happens. Or like, man, you know, what about when I play the Opry? I'm going to want to, you know, go out and have a good time after that. And so I just kept always making an excuse to quit. And I feel like one day God was just screaming at me like, hey, if you want me to like start blessing you in the way that you want to be blessed, you're going to have to give this up. Because it's going to eventually ruin you if you don't. And I'm not going to allow that to happen. And so I quit drinking on November 11th of 23, I think. And I kid you not, right after I quit drinking, within the first couple of months, I got engaged. I had my first major label cut as a songwriter. I signed my first publishing deal. Me and my wife, she bought a house just like kind of in the perfect spot, like where me and her wanted to be. And just all of these great things kind of started happening. And I was like, okay, listening to God is effective. And like, I would just stop ignoring him, it would be, you know, things will get better and things will change. And I've gone through ebb and flows. Like right now my cup is feeling full at, you know, as the present moment, and like my faith is feeling good. And I feel like I'm, you know, stepping in the, I'm moving towards or moving on the path that I should be on. But I mean, 2 weeks ago, I didn't feel that way. And I was driving into town screaming at the sky, you know, asking God why he's doing this, and why hasn't this thing worked, or why, you know, is this thing difficult, or whatever it is. But I understand how important having a good faith is, and I'm constantly trying to work at building it. And rooting it to be a little bit deeper. But I struggle with it so much, dude. I mean, yeah, I struggle with it a lot, but I know the importance of it.
I wonder if we saw God's blessing in our life. Like, what if we're praying, God bless me. Okay, whatever's on my table gets increased.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so then you look at people and they start to see that God brings this increase. But if I have anger is going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, God bless me. And God's like, okay, but when my blessing's going to come increase.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, then if I have the, if I have no self-control, right, the alcohol thing or whatever it is, then like that chaos, because, you know, I'm going to call the opposite of self-control is chaos.
Yeah.
So chaos increases, anger increases, fear increases. And the Lord's like, I really can't bless you yet, because if I do, fear increases. Gosh, I know you're asking me to bless you, and I love you so much, and I want to bless you. But if I bless you right now, anxiety increases. And that's when good, you, dude. When you got this thing with in that November, you think you said November 11th or something. When you and the Lord, suddenly you had something to kill together.
Yeah.
You had a thing with Jesus for you and him to destroy. Because it was like, I can't afford for this to increase. Maybe you felt like where you were wasn't crazy, wasn't bad, but man, if this increases, I got no margin.
Yeah.
Because if everything's about to increase, if this increases, then my marriage is at risk, my all these other things. And so you and the Lord had something to kill. And when we have that, it makes this real clear, hand in hand, pace for pace, walk with the Lord. But there comes a point when we stop having something to destroy and we start having something to build.
Yeah.
David is, if we'll face enemies and he'll have to destroy some things, and there'll be people he have to, you know, he'll face Goliath, he'll face Philistines. Nehemiah later, he's going to have something to build. Both have adversaries, and I'm not saying David didn't have to build anything, but actually David wants to build a temple he's not allowed to.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where you I think we all have David moments in our life where we have something to destroy. Then there's some Solomon moments in our life where we have something to build. And I'm just listening, wondering if Brian Fuller's next pace for pace, step for step, is not what else needs to be destroyed, but what is the thing that needs to be built?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the Lord.
Yeah.
That same energy. And part of it could be your career, absolutely, as a songwriter, as this. But part of it may be your buddies around your table with your Bibles open.
Yeah.
At 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And until you and Jesus start to build that thing together. And maybe some of it is writer's round and those things.
Yeah.
But I know in my life, off stage, no music, no worship, until I really partnered with him to build the thing that he loves. And I know exactly what it is that me and my wife said yes to building this thing with Jesus, that it's not my missions organization, it's not my platform. When we said yes to that, there was this newness. It felt like this time when me and Jesus were trying to kill that thing that was killing me.
Yeah.
But now we're building the thing. And I wonder what that prayer with Brian Fuller and Jesus would look like. With the coffee sitting over top of Nashville saying, okay, we killed that. And I know you created me since I saw that video of me at one, because I bet you don't remember it.
No,
but you saw the video. I know I saw that. So I know I have that. But what do you want to build together?
Yeah.
That's not Brian Fuller music. What is the other thing that we build? Because I can't go any further without that energy that we had.
That's great, dude. That's a good word.
No, I think some of it is the, I think it's called the red car rule, right?
The red car rule?
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you decide that you're going to go buy a car and you go, I think I'm going to buy my car in red. Right. What do you start to see?
Red.
All red cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this rule applies in our own faith when we start to go, I want to see God's blessing, and we see one if we start seeing them all over the place. If our mind's eye gets kind of trained or adapted, or our brain starts to see where the increase comes, if I start to commit myself to go, I want to see God's increase, if maybe my brain and my eyes get adjusted so I see it everywhere, where God's already is increasing and I've just not been able to see it. Like, I don't see red cars, so I start thinking about red cars.
Yeah.
My wife yesterday said, this is funny, she goes, she's almost done with her doctorate, and she's like, I want a BMW X1. Guess what we saw all day? BMW X1. Like, because suddenly we're looking for them.
Yeah.
So I think when you adjust your vision to say, suddenly I'm looking for God's increase, I'm wondering if we start seeing that it's been there all along, we just not been seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know what I want him to partner with me on.
Right.
Like, I know, even sitting in the conversation, I want God to partner with Brian Fuller on music and performance and being Jesus to a ton of people.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, there's no limit to the amount of notoriety that I wouldn't give to Brian Fuller. Let him have all of it.
Yeah.
That's great, because he can be Jesus to that many more people. I know what I want him to partner with Brian Fuller on. Mm-hmm. It's clear since he was one. I don't know for sure what God wants Brian Fuller to partner with Jesus on.
Yeah.
That's great. Great.
And that could be very small.
Yeah.
That could be four guys in Nashville that play pickleball and coach a soccer team. I don't know. Right. I mean, he's definitely not playing baseball in the outfield.
No, I'm not he's doing just, that.
That's a dig, man. That was deep.
No, wasn't that off air, though, when we talked about that anyway?
Yeah. Nobody's going to catch a joke.
Yeah. Dude, there's one thing, like, in particular that comes to mind, just, like, hearing y'all talk about that I have, like, been wanting to start, just haven't had the, really the finances to start it, because it's kind of a big thing, but, and I don't want to say it out loud, because I don't want anybody to take the idea, because it's pretty cool. I'll have to tell y'all later, but, yeah, dude, I have those big visions of, like, starting some kind of ministry or starting some kind of,
you know. Can I ask you this?
Yeah,
without asking you to name it, how much do you need? You need more than $50,000?
Oh, no, I don't need more than $50,000.
More than 10? You need 20?
Yeah, probably around 10 to 20. It's kind of one of those things that, It would be like an outreach kind of thing. Like, it's,
I don't want you to name it. $25,000. Would that be like, if somebody wrote you a check for $25,000 that you could be like, all right.
If one of our listeners who wants to make a seed is like, what does Brian Fuller need?
Yeah. I mean, probably around, I'd say probably around 20 grand.
I don't
grand.
Care. It could be 50. So, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, genuinely, one of the things we were considering doing to get it going was creating a merch line to kind of kickstart it and kind of bring in some of those funds. Mm-hmm. And it honestly just came down to, like, man, you know, I want to do this, but it would be trying to build two things at once,
mm-hmm.
and then also having a family on top of that. Yep. But the whole mission of the it would be a nonprofit. The nonprofit I'm wanting to start is to essentially introduce young men and girls to to Jesus through the outdoors.
I love it. I just want to do this. Lord, mid-podcast, just want to ask you right now. You have been with Brian Fuller for a long time. You've unearthed things when he was little. Mm-hmm. You unearthed stuff in him. We're not putting a sense of urgency on this, that it has to happen, like, in the next 7 days.
Right.
But we won't push the brakes on it either, Lord. We're praying right now that you're not going to have to wait on us. And it may start on a piece of paper before it starts with a filing of a nonprofit. But, Lord, I do pray that you would bring the idea that will fund it. Give him a song that will fund it.
Yeah.
Give him a song that will fund all of this for him. A partnership, a person, and then give him the people that will help him build it, so he doesn't have to stop building what you created him to do.
Thank you.
I don't think you're in competition, Lord. I pray those things in Jesus' name.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, yeah. man.
Sorry, yeah, I know a lot of times we pray off air for people.
Yeah.
And I just was like, man, you're talking about something. I just want to pray into it and believe now. Boom.
Yeah. And it's I'll have to tell y'all more about it because I think y'all probably really interested just in the concept.
Absolutely.
But it's essentially just because when I was younger, again, I knew who Jesus was, but I didn't really have the mentorship of individuals pouring into me to show me more. And I love hunting. I love fishing. I love being turkey hunting, deer hunting, I mean, all of it. I love being in the outdoors.
Yeah.
And me and I had this idea to kind of bring some buddies in and be like, you know, what if we kind of built this thing and let young kids, young girls, young guys come out and hunt with us and fish with us and just kind of start to introduce them to the Lord through that. Yeah. And I have a name for it. I have like the mission statement and everything. It's just kind of sitting there waiting, you know, to happen. And I kind of always wanted that thing to grow alongside my career. But yeah, it's you know, in God's timing, man, it's something that's always just on the back of my mind.
I would say, and not taking away from the uniqueness of it, but I would say there's probably other people who have that same heart who would love to partner with you.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think Brian, your prayer is right. Like, send the money, send the song, but send the people who are like, that's my heart's been beating for that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think,
and I have the outfitter already lined up, like who we partner with for the hunts.
Yeah.
I've already talked to him about it and we've already kind of decided on how we would do it. And he was like, man, whenever you got it figured out, and you're ready to do it. Let's do it. But it, man, I really appreciate that prayer. I hope that, you know.
I think you and Jesus chasing that and building that would have the same level of, like, excitement and energy as you had when we were killing this other thing.
Yeah. Right? I think so, too. When I had the idea, I was on the porch one morning reading the Bible, and I got the idea from a verse in the Bible. And named it after that specific verse.
Yeah.
And I was fired up about it. I mean, and I still am, but I remember that next weekend I was driving up to that. I was going to hunt with that my buddy that is kind of planning on partnering with me on it. And all the way up there, dude, I was making phone calls to like buddies of mine that lead, you know, Bible studies and you know, pastor friends of mine be like, hey, if I started this thing, would y'all be willing to come up and be like a guest speaker one night or whatever? And like, so, I mean, I've got the people around me to do it. It's just kind of like making it happen. But yeah, I'll have to tell y'all more about it later on. Just like I said, I don't want to give my name away because it's pretty cool, man.
It's don't do that. But I love, too, that the same way your career has started in the sense of you don't start out on arenas.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're starting out with three songs that your mom made you sing at this place. I would say the same way. Like, I know you didn't get in a fight at school and get suspended, but I feel like I want to take the voice of your mom.
That might be something he's right.
Say, go get six kids or five or teenagers or college students and do it.
Yeah.
Right. And even if you haven't have the name and the nonprofit, and they don't have to be like some like poverty stricken child that's never had any love in their life. Mm-hmm. It can just be that go get the three songs and you're going to sing them on this stage.
Yeah.
Right? Go do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's great. It's a great idea. Yeah. It really is.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. I love this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, hey, this could be the start of it, dude. You know.
Okay, here's what I'll do. You get your first thing ready. I'll send Memphis. I'll send my son.
Okay. Yeah, dude.
I'll send him on a hunt.
I'd love for both of y'all to come, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of like the tricky part where the money and stuff comes in. It's you want these people to feel like they're not financially burdened to come out and
yeah, of course.
Pay for the experience. So that's kind of like where the, you know. Hey.
As a guy who raises money, though, I raise money for missions. Like, so we do wells in Africa and that kind of stuff. That's what I do when I'm not a nobody here. I'm doing that other stuff. You know what? I ask people for money all the time. I never feel guilty asking people for money. Like I wouldn't bat an eye at asking you for $1,000. I don't care.
Yeah.
I also don't get mad if people don't have it to give or want to give other places. I'm not mad.
Yeah.
But Target don't mind asking for money.
Yeah. Absolutely, dude.
Target don't mind. Every time I go in there, they're putting all kinds of stuff everywhere.
They're always asking.
Target will ask for money like everybody else does.
Yeah.
Chili's don't mind.
Yeah.
You want salsa? You want to bring out some salsa? What they're saying is, would you like to give us more money? Because you good and well know them portions are big enough without the salsa.
Yeah.
That you didn't need that. That was just a way for them to get your money. So Chili's don't mind. Target don't mind. So it's okay if the Brian Fuller outdoor experience.
Yeah.
if people will give, because people were going to give. And then there are people who give it forward. I think we've already prayed, and now I'm just hyped up. Now I'm just ready to go.
Heck yeah, dude. I'm just I can't wait to tell you all a bit more about
that. Let's put a pin in the conversation.
Okay, my bad. All right,
so we have a couple questions. It's been a great conversation, Brian. Yeah. We've been so glad to meet you, man.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I think I listened to most of the music, and I think tomorrow you got a new song coming out, right?
Yeah. Well, tonight at midnight it comes out.
We're recording on 6/18, so it drops 6/19. This episode will come out about a month afterwards. Yeah. But Country 2, right? T-O-O, is that the name of it? So make sure you go stream that and support Brian there. But we have a couple questions to wrap up a conversation. Yep. Brian, Lindsay, hit him with what you were.
Okay, so here's my question, and right before I ask it, here's what I'll... You know what I think would be a dope Brian Fuller move?
Sure.
I see Brian Fuller doing like a fairgrounds tour.
Yeah, like
at all the fairgrounds. I grew up at the fairgrounds. We used to talk about small towns bouncing back and forth. I thought about Cookeville and Sparta. Yeah. Like at the Sparta
County Fairgrounds.
Yes, the County
Fairs. Yes.
The County Fairground Tour. And just like killing it. And then all these townies, not townies, because that's like what? North or something, like Boston or something. I don't know what townies are. But all these just like Carhartt truck beds just for miles at a county fair tour. Okay, here's my question. What would you say to somebody who's like afraid to start, afraid to dream? Maybe they're insecure, fear. How would you tell them, how would you encourage them to get them off the couch just to do something, to take the risk?
Man, I'm going to steal a line from one of my songs because this is the reason why I put the line in there, but nobody ever talks about the things you never did when you're dead and gone. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you...
What a great line.
Just trying to do it, even if you don't succeed in it, just trying alone will help you sleep better at night. Because one day you will be turning 50 years old and you're going to turn around and look back at your life and be like, man, I wish that I would have. And that is the kind of thing that keeps me up at night. Like thinking if one day I'm going to look back and say, I wish I would have done this, that would kill me to just dwell on that for years and years. So, I think that just having that mentality in the back of your head, like, you know, if I don't do it, like, again, nobody ever talks about things that you never did.
I'm going to give both you guys a line to write for a song so you guys can take it, and I'll take my one or two points on it.
Okay.
But my dreams keep me up at night.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm supposed to be doing in my sleep, but it keeps me up. You guys can write that song.
I think you're a little stingy with 2 points.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take one.
For the line. I mean, you're a little stingy with it.
Take it for free.
Point on
whatever. So whatever. Anyways.
You know what? You don't get to choose difficulty. Things will come difficult.
Yeah.
Difficulty is for everybody. You don't get to choose that. Now, you get to choose where your difficulty directs you.
Right.
You can start a business. You can do the music career. You can take the risk. You can write the book. You can write the song. You can do an EP in your living room, whatever. You don't get to choose difficulty. It's not optional.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people have dreams that they can't sleep because they keep waking up to them.
Yep.
And they're not doing them.
Yeah.
So
is that you, bro?
That's
amen.
Off air, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. We'll get him next time. We'll come together and we'll jump on Jeff's dreams.
Yeah. One final question we got for you, Brian. Amen. Here at a couple of nobodies, we see nobodies as a good thing. So who is a nobody in your life that you think the world should know about?
That's a great question. My little brother, dude, honestly, like, there's a, gosh, there's so many people, but that just come to mind. But my little brother is like, he's only 16, and like seeing his work ethic and just how hard he hustles and the things that he already cares about at such a young age, I'm like, dude, you are light years ahead of where I was at whenever I was your age. So yeah, probably my little brother. Shout out Noah.
Yeah. All right, shout out to Noah.
Heck yeah.
But dude, this has been a joy. I've enjoyed the music. Have you streamed the music?
What?
His music.
No, I waited till after. I
didn't okay, want you want to spoil like, it?
Spoil.
Yeah. Okay, well, go. I was like, go yeah. listen to Katie's song for sure.
When Ben sent me his stuff over, I went through his like social media stuff. But like, I'm getting ready to leave here and do a 2-hour drive. Okay. And so he's my Spotify.
Yeah.
List.
So Katie's song is great. Mm-hmm. I listened to both versions of I Could Be the Rain, his and then Randall King's. Both. Yeah. Both great versions. Just make the boy some coffee money, man.
There you go. Yeah, it. Please.
All right. Hit it up on Spotify, Apple Music. So, man, we love to have this conversation. As we say here at A Couple of Noboys all the time, Brian, you don't ever have to try to be somebody with us, man.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for coming
on. Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me, brother. It's been a blast.